Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Long Story Short, the podcast about storytelling and connection. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Sophia. Through this platform, we highlight the unique stories of people making a difference as marketers, entrepreneurs, and social impact advocates, or people who are all of the above. On this week's show, we chat with Jeremy Collins. Jeremy is the Executive Vice President of Marketing at Azuga, a Bridgestone company.
He has spent his career building and leading sales teams through M&A and an IPO, as well as leading marketing teams within the MarTech space. Most recently, he has led the marketing team through the acquisition by Bridgestone.
Jeremy specializes in revenue marketing, where the strategy is driven by data insights that produce actions and ensuring those actions produce results.
So without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with Jeremy Collins. Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for being on Long Story Short.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff. Happy to be here.
So today's episode is all about the power of incremental improvements. And I want to go back to your days in telecom earlier in your career. And can you tell us about the playbook that you were able to build and what results that was able to generate for the company at the time?
Yeah, I started on the sales side through mergers and acquisitions, and we would acquire these companies in different markets. And I would come in, build the sales team out. And what I learned really quickly is that there was always a framework of success, no matter where the market was, no matter what stage of even the product was in within that company, there's always some fundamental foundational things we had to do between the people side, the process side, the system side, and developing that formula of success. So at a very high level, that formula for success could essentially scale anywhere. And so I would come in, we would really start from ground zero after an acquisition, build out a sales team, build out a go-to-market program. How do we target the right audience with the right messaging? And what were the metrics of success on a daily basis? So we were never looking backwards 3 months to figure out what the results were. We were looking essentially in real time every single day to see, did we have the right leading indicators based on that formula of success? And so we can make those incremental adjustments in real time versus the surprise quarter of we failed or we succeeded. We knew those failures and successes in virtually real time.
I love that concept. And certainly as somebody who's very data-driven themselves, the idea that having that foundation and the framework and ultimately, again, not being surprised by a quarter one way or the other. And just in terms of, and then along your path, I mean, it sounds like it was sort of a similar, sort of operating model at UMA. Is that right?
Yeah. So when we scaled from kind of startup to IPO on the sales side, same type of thing. And what actually is really interesting in that is shifting from the sales growth to the marketing side of the house. And that always stuck with me. You know, it's like, if that works on the sales side from a go-to-market perspective, why wouldn't that work from a marketing side, from a go-to-market perspective? Like the same fundamental core concepts, but it's a lot easier for a sales team to do that because it's so data-driven, so metrics-driven. Everyone's tied to a number individually and collectively. And so it's just like, it's a much easier model to build within sales. And you know, if anyone is in sales listening to this, it's like, yeah, duh. Like, of course, like I'm looking at my reps numbers every single day. Like, why wouldn't I be doing that? On the marketing side, that's not as normal to tie direct results to direct activities, to, you know, accountability within every channel owner and every campaign and tie it all to revenue. And so I think that from the sales side, all of those core concepts definitely apply to marketing. And I think you even see this adoption happening within marketing teams where slowly teams are starting to realize that marketing can't continue to be a cost center needs to be a profit center, and it's no longer just marketing brand awareness, it's revenue marketing. And so I think as marketers, we can always take lessons from sales in a lot of ways, both operationally and, you know, tactically, and apply that to kind of the day-to-day concepts of marketing as well.
And then I'm interested, because I think part of your success that we've talked about is that you have this background in sales that was then able to transition into your field of marketing. But what inspired that switch to begin with?
It was really all on the other side of the fence. And I felt like I can make an impact with the sales side and merging the two together. Because what I noticed time and time again, when we were successful, it was when sales and marketing are working together, driving together, aligned together. And when there were challenges, it was when sales was siloed and marketing was siloed. So I really wanted to expand, you know, just for my own career.
So along the lines of building a consistent playbook, I know your experience at ESW was the most extreme version of that. And so we're wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the approach they take within companies in their portfolio.
Yeah, ESW, and on the private equity side, it's really interesting because you can essentially build out those framework of success simultaneously at different companies and test the model, you know, and expedite your learnings times 100, right? Like ESW has 100 different software companies in the portfolio. You know, my team and I were responsible for bringing those products to market, relaunching products that had been out of the market for some period of time, and essentially running the go-to-market across multiple software companies simultaneously. So in order to do that with the same team of people, you have to have a playbook of success. You know, it's just, there's too many moving parts across too many different companies. And so it really tested this concept around, you know, what is the playbook of success? What playbooks even need to be created against which campaigns and which circumstances, and what works for certain target audience versus others? And, you know, what category of software, you know, how do you prioritize those playbooks to launch those companies? And so the lesson there was really like, number one, A, it is possible. You can literally do 10 go-to-market launches at once with virtually the same playbooks and the same people balancing out the time. As long as you execute, there's not a lot that will slip through the cracks. And so, yeah, that was probably the biggest lesson of ESW, and it provided a lot of quick real-time insights, because we could understand, like, was this just a fluke at this one company, or, you know, replicate it at three other software companies, because they were all independent brands under the one umbrella of the portfolio. So that was really interesting.
Yeah. Again, I was just so interested in that concept of, you know, again, if something works in terms of building those playbooks, like, why wouldn't you just go to the extreme and sort of do it again and again and again, and, you know, simultaneously, right? So, like, I want to dig deeper into now at Azuga how you're able to effectively align really the marketing and sales organizations, and so how do you use the measurement strategy around the inputs and outputs to ensure that you're connecting to revenue and driving those incremental improvements.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with transparency. So, like, you know, everything from like building those playbooks aligned to the sales team. Like, they understand before anything gets launched what the anticipated outcome is, what the activities will be from a marketing perspective, and what we need from them from a sales perspective. Because, you know, we're not just trying to lob a bunch of leads over to sales and cross our fingers and hope that everything works out. There's a connection point across the board. So we're accountable to sales, and sales is accountable for us. And we make those agreements up front, and then we're very transparent along the way. And so, you know, it really comes down to like building the playbooks together, providing agreements and commitments all the way through, with the flexibility to know, because we're tracking it on an hourly, daily basis, we can be flexible. And if sales needs an adjustment, we'll make that adjustment. If we need an adjustment, sales will make that adjustment for us. So it very quickly just becomes one team, one mission, one goal. And all of those steps, all of those playbooks ultimately line up to the revenue number we need to achieve. And so I think between the transparency, the planning, the execution, those are all really important elements. And then there's some things that you don't necessarily see on a day-to-day, but just the fact that, like, for myself, I have the same goal as the head of sales. I don't have a marketing goal where it's like, I only need to contribute this much, but you have to contribute this much so I can succeed even if you fail, and vice versa. That's not the way it works. Like, we very quickly said, you have a goal, so I'll take that same goal too, and we'll just drive that together, which then expands the playbooks beyond marketing, because now you start thinking, okay, well, we have to provide this amount of inbound activity. We have to do this much from a marketing perspective. But we also have an outbound team. Like, why don't they get marketing support? So very quickly, you start building playbooks for the outbound team. And so now, as we march towards the one revenue number we're driving towards within the sales group, you know, from start to finish, there's just all these natural alignment points that happen. So that whole blame game completely disappears, because you would essentially be blaming yourself because you're all doing the same thing, marching to the same beat.
Yeah, and something I want to highlight for, you know, a lot of the what we work with a lot of marketing organizations, and one of the most common issues is sort of that sales alignment. And so we see frequently where marketing and sales are measuring themselves differently. And so then it becomes that scenario where, you know, frankly, you have this in sort of the worst case scenario, both organizations are saying, we hit all of our numbers, yet, you know, somehow the company's not growing, right? And so I love the idea of sort of the combined measurement strategy, the idea that measuring the right things. I know sometimes organizations will go out there to the extreme and kind of try to measure everything and then, you know, end up cherry picking. But so in our experience, certainly agreeing before anything is launched, you know, agreeing how something's going to be measured. And even back to, you know, where we started this conversation, that when you focus it on the process, sort of the results will take care of themselves. The scoreboard will take care of itself.
Yeah.
As an example for the power of incremental improvements, I also love the story of how you've been able to grow a Zuga brand through like SEO strategies. And so I'm interested how you've been approaching making those gains in SEO and what the results have been.
Yeah. From an SEO perspective, I mean, there's kind of two layers there. There's the technical SEO, and then there's content marketing. So when you think about, like, I mean, this is its own playbook for us. Like, what's our SEO playbook? So from a technical SEO, that's like very foundational. I think in a lot of ways, people either focus on the technical side or they focus on the content side, but it's really both. Over time, as all the technical side of your SEO is kind of humming, the content really becomes the critical factor there. And so for us, we do a few things, but we tie in SEM with SEO because you can get a lot of the keywords lessons together. And you know, we have an economic keyword model within SEM. And there's times where certain keywords, you know, that we all want to go after just don't fit the economic model, which essentially means that we're getting the right ROI at the keyword level through SEM. And so there's times where we have to shift keywords to SEO because it doesn't fit our economic model on the SEM side, but we're not willing to just give up on that keyword. So that's one, you know, kind of scenario. The other thing is, you know, this changes based on products launched, the market itself, competitive analysis, but we always create our content pillars within our strategy. So every month we basically redevelop our content strategy based on previous lessons, based on what's working, based on striking distance keywords, And then we develop those content pillars, normally about three of them. And every content pillar, you know, that can be a thought leadership topic, that can be a product topic, that can be like very bottom of funnel. And so we'll look at all the data and just determine what those are going to be, what our commitments are going to be, how much content do we need to win. And we just start writing it, you know, and it's a long-term play. So like, if you look at our organic traffic over the last 2 years, I mean, we go from ranking on literally like 30 keywords that were non-branded to now over 12,000. And some of those keywords within the 12,000, because this is kind of an interesting topic in itself. Sometimes people want to go after that keyword that has 10,000 searches every single month. But there's also like 300 other competitors trying to capture that keyword. And if you can get it, great. You know, we would love to have that traffic too, you know, when it makes sense. But where we find our sweet spot is like almost like the edges of the market, like the forgotten keywords. And what's really interesting about this, especially in the beginning and building that out over the last couple of years, is those keywords still give you domain authority, which allow you to go back to those high volume keywords later. And so the keyword selection on what we're trying to go after, and then measuring it every single week, every single month, every single quarter on progress and making the adjustments, making the optimizations, it all starts building on top of itself. So virtually like everything we do is about how do we get a quick win up front, and then how do we keep building on that over time. And so in real time, you get these like 1% improvements, 5% improvements. Every once in a while, you get a big win, but we're not really chasing big wins. We're not chasing home runs. We're just trying to get a single every single day consistently, and we'll score more runs that way than all of our competitors. I mean, we could probably just fill that talk track into any campaign we run, but for SEO specifically, yeah, it really is just like continuing to build on it and committing to it for the long term. And we've now, you know, we have the luxury now of going back a couple of years since that started, and we see those results coming through.
I love what you said about the edges of the market, because I think, you know, the truth is 99% of companies out there, that's really where their sweet spot should be, right? And so ultimately starting there is what allows you to get the big win. And the other thing, and the reason I love the concept of incremental improvements is especially the way we're talking about it. It really is sort of the compound interest in business that, you know, 1% improvements daily don't sound like much, but over the course of a year, if you were to improve 1% every day, you'd be 37 times better at the end of the year. And but that concept of not just being okay with hitting a single, but actually making that the goal. And sometimes you will end up hitting the doubles and the triples and the home runs, but honestly, you know, making the single your goal and continuing to do that is, I think so many people are unaware of like that will actually end up being the same as, you know, hitting five consecutive home runs at the end of the day.
Yeah. And it's a much smaller mountain to climb, right? Like you're literally just taking one step at a time. And naturally, as you take those steps, you'll climb that mountain, but you're not focused on, oh my gosh, I got to get to the top of this mountain, which is an overwhelming feeling at the beginning. It's easier to look back when you're on the top of the mountain, like, oh, that was easier than I thought. And I also think, aside from just like conceptually what we're talking about and like even like the tactics side, I think it's really important to have like a definition of what success is and who owns that thing, that campaign, that strategy, that tactic. And so part of this is also like tightly aligning the people, right? Like who's going to, like in the SEO side, who's going to write this content? Who's going to own this? Who's going to be the expert in this content pillar? And having somebody own it so that when they do achieve great results, they also get the credit for it, you know? And so we always focus on like the roles and responsibilities along with the strategies and the tactics, like they all merge together.
Something I like that you said is when they achieve it, not like if they achieve it. And I think that's really important to call out, because beginning with a definition of success and a communal understanding of what that looks like and how we're going to get there is how you assure success gets achieved.
Yeah, I also like diversifying the strategy there too, right? Like maybe you'll only get 2 out of 3. You know, like we don't put all of our eggs in one basket. We might go all in against the playbook, 3 out of 3. It's not confusing because you're just replicating similar tactics, similar strategy, building on the same foundation. But we don't have this culture of like, if you don't succeed, it means you're a massive failure. It's like, we're going to have wins and we're going to have duds along the way. So we'll have the strikeouts, but collectively, as we look back across the weeks, the months, the quarters, the years, it is a win column. But it doesn't mean that we didn't strike out along the way, or that, you know, sometimes those strikeouts are actually very necessary for us to understand why we struck out and how do we fundamentally improve and how do we adjust the playbook for the next time.
That's what I was going to call out is, you know, strikeouts and quote unquote failures are sometimes just as important. But I think, again, you make those learning experiences because you have an understanding across the board of why, what you were trying to achieve. And then by deeming it a failure, what didn't work out. And that's how you can, as a group and as a team, understand and learn from that experience.
Yeah. One thing that kind of comes to mind as we talk about kind of the strikeout failure side is going back to the sales and marketing alignment. One of the biggest fears that I don't think enough people talk about is like when marketing fails, which is inevitable, just like sales will fail along the way, and we all will somewhere at some point, you know, it's just part of what we do. And if we don't fail, it means we weren't trying hard enough and we didn't take on enough risks. So I think most people will agree that failure is one of the factors here. But what people don't talk about is like marketing doesn't want to let sales down at the end of the day. Marketing doesn't want to walk into the meeting with sales and explain their big failure. But I actually think we should. Like, it's okay to let sales know we thought this would work. We tried this. We executed on it and it didn't work. So we're going to do something else and we're going to make that adjustment. And if we have the right level of alignment, it's not sales coming to marketing and saying like, how dare you give me a bad lead, you know, and how dare this campaign fail? It's like, they're in it with us, right? Like they're part of that journey. And so the whole like blame game and fear of failing, sometimes like it really is just like, I don't want to walk into the sales meeting with a failure because I know they're going to pounce on it. And then I don't even want to talk to them afterwards because like there's now friction. Like at the end of the day, friction creates fire. It's okay. And it's okay to fail and let them down. They might let us down later. Like we all have that. That's part of the alignment, is that we both allow each other to have some failures along the way, along with the wins, and we'll celebrate and adjust to either one.
There was a quote I saw last night. It was, one of the riskiest things we can do in life is playing it safe. So I love the concept of, you know, if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough. So we've talked a lot about sort of that aligning marketers to revenue, especially, and which is, you know, obviously a hugely important concept, but that's not necessarily everything that marketers are tasked with. And so I'd love to hear your perspective on sort of the relationship between capturing the demand in the short term, but then also building a brand for the long term.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's all tightly connected. So, you know, to me, there's really three pillars of marketing success that all feed into each other. It's almost like a flywheel. So you have your brand, then you have demand, and then you have expand. And so if you don't have a brand, it's much harder to produce demand. If you don't have demand, you have nothing to expand on. So, you know, you're immediately out of luck there. So if everything funnels back to brand and everything funnels through to the expansion site and it's everything in between, then that is marketing's responsibility. But they just like sales and marketing shouldn't be siloed, those strategies don't need to be siloed either. And so as you build those playbooks of success, it's like, okay, how are we going to create brand awareness? Okay, well, how do we create a brand? You know, is it going to be events? Okay, if we do events, then what does that mean like for the results side? How is that brand tying into that demand? And, you know, and so everything has to connect the dots somewhere. And that becomes a lot, you know, and we also have kind of a luxury there because we don't have to make a decision of like, are we going to do a Super Bowl commercial, right? Like our decisions are much easier. Like you can actually trace all the way through the funnel from brand. But then it becomes like, okay, how do we measure it? What are the leading indicators? So, you know, whether it's, I mean, SEO is one of the content pillars is on the brand side, like between thought leadership, like how do we get their eyeball early? That's on the brand side. You know, there's reviews, which I always think is like one of the most interesting ways to build a brand is you leverage the customer base to build your brand for you, because there's no better advocate than the user already using it. But that's its own strategy. Like you can't just like sit back and hope they go fill out their G2 crowd profile and, you know, spend 45 minutes leaving you a review. There's a lot of nudging that has to happen and guidance that has to happen to make sure that those reviews come through. It's even part of the targeting, like, where's the low-hanging fruit to get the best reviews? Well, let's tap into our customer marketing strategy where we have all these 9 and 10 NPS reviews. There's our gold mine of reviews to go tap into for everything else. And so tying all these pillars together from a marketing perspective is really where the magic happens. And so, you know, we very rarely have a campaign that doesn't connect the dots all the way through or isn't leveraging one of the other buckets to make their bucket more successful.
So it's funny that we've ended this conversation talking extensively about success, because one question we always ask our guests is how they define success within their personal or professional life. Take it whichever direction you want, but how do you define success within yourself?
That is a complicated question, right? Because like, I don't know that there is like a go, no-go date of success. Like, because most people, especially people I like to work with, what you think is success today, and when you hit that, you find out that you raise the bar just a little bit more. So to some degree, like success never actually happens if you do it right, because you're always chasing it. And so there's almost no end game to that. You know, it's like Rockefeller has a famous quote when he had, you know, he's the first billionaire ever. And somebody asked him, like, you know, you're a billionaire. Like, when are you going to stop? Like, when are you done? And he said, just one more dollar. Like, just one more dollar. Just one more dollar. And, you know, everyone has their version of what they're chasing and what their goals are, like from a personal career perspective. But I think everyone knows this, like if you hit success and then you stop, you very quickly just go right back to where you were when you started, whether that's like, I mean, think about like working out, you know, if you work out and you build your muscle and you hit your goals and then you stop for 5 years, that muscle doesn't stay anymore. It's gone. And so it's the same thing with everything. You can't stop. Otherwise, you only had a successful day and it was fleeting. It's now gone.
I love the concept, though, of success is enabling yourself to continue moving that bar, right? So it's reaching one level of what you where you thought it might be and then being able to reset those expectations and definitions. So we also like to ask, what resources would you want to share with our audience? Books, blogs, podcasts, anything that's inspired you personally or professionally?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much content out there. I mean, like, you know, I don't even know if there's one. It's funny you ask this because I've been asked this a few times. I never know how to answer because for me, it's very like topical. Like I'm not loyal to one kind of person, thought leader, website. It's more topical. Like I want to learn about this thing, or I want to get more insights about this, and where can I access data or reports for this? And there's just such a wealth of information out there that, like, you know, it's just more about like pursuing it and actually doing it. So whether it's a podcast or a piece of content, yeah, I mean, I'm not, there's nothing specific I would necessarily recommend other than just go look for it. You know, it's all out there, you know.
And, the magic of SEO.
Yeah. And then the other side of that is like, find mentors, right? Like the actual, like have a real conversation with people or be a mentor, like one way or another, always have a mentor, always be a mentor and like make that happen. And you know, that tends to be one of the areas where you really see development and change, and you know, talking about success, the bar continues to grow when you get that outside perspective. Because sometimes you can hold yourself back because you don't want to fail, and those mentors can really help you out. And sometimes it's a peer, like it's not like always, you know, your boss. Like sometimes it's your boss, sometimes it's not. It's just people around you. Like always have a mentor.
I love that. And where can people find and connect with you on social media?
I'd say LinkedIn is the best option. So you'll find, I'm sure you'll have a link somewhere. And
That'll all be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. And most importantly, thank you for sharing your story with us.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
We had a great conversation with Jeremy. I love his focus on incremental improvement and building repeatable playbooks.
If you want to reach out to us directly about this story or inquire about sharing your own story, you can reach us at lsspodcast@circanresearch.com.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us for a new story next week on Long Story Short.